Hi, this is Dr. Kimberly Leonard, author of Visualizing Happiness in Every Area of Your Life and host of this podcast, Incredible Life Creator. And today I have Miss ST Rappaport on with me. Hey, how are you?
So excited to be here with you, Kimberly, again. How you doing?
I am great. So this is your second time on the podcast. And you were doing one thing and now you're doing something that's a little bit different. And so wanted to make sure people were aware of what you're doing and how it could help them. So let me just read your short bio. ST Rappaport is a brain engineer who works with ADHD entrepreneurs to unleash their potential via peak brain performance. ST assists them to optimize their ADHD so they can remove overwhelm, get more done in less time, and enjoy growing their business again. So, just since we do have you on another podcast telling your whole story, why don't you just let us know kind of how you started out, but just make it a shorter story.
Yeah, we'll make keep it as short as possible, and you can cut me out if need be. So when I was struggling to read in fifth grade, so I've been going to tutors and tutors for many years. The one thing that finally did help me to be able to read easily was not another reading tutor, but was actually working on how my brain was thinking, was working on the three phases of thinking. And so at that age, I decided I wanted to learn it, but I did not realize it would be my whole life. And if you've listened to the previous episode, then you know that for a big chunk after school, then I was doing some other sort of stuff. I did some photography, creative journaling, like expressive arts types of therapies, things like that. But during those years of running those other businesses, I was taking training. I started at 17. I took training to learn about how the brain was thinking, to learn about these three phases of thinking. And during that time, I had such a massive improvement from one thinking skill. It saved me like over 10 hours every week. It helped me grow one of my businesses like 3 times, like the amount, like everything just completely changed that I knew. Adults need this. Entrepreneurs need this. ADHD entrepreneurs need this. And that's when I went full in on this that I something that I was already studying for all those years and got to where I am today.
Yeah, and it's actually they've done research on things, and so many entrepreneurs are ADHD. In fact, part of that, because people with ADHD have had to adapt over their years, it actually makes them great entrepreneurs because, running any type of business, if anyone knows who has ever done it, is that nothing's ever the same. Never, nothing's ever regular. You're always hit with something new that you have to problem solve on. So you have to be flexible and you have to be able to adapt. And so you see a lot of entrepreneurs who actually have this where they're multitasking on top of multitasking. There's and they seem to be able to do it. And we look at them and go, wow. And then what we don't realize is behind the scenes, underwater, like a little duck, they're just like, they are just paddling, paddling, paddling just to make it look easy.
Yeah,
So,
I would say, yeah, no, I agree. We just see like the outside of like what everyone else is doing, and we don't see like the behind the scenes and how many hours they slept or didn't sleep. But I was just gonna add on the thing of multitasking. We actually don't multitask. We do what's called task switching. We switch really fast from task to task, and that's what people with ADHD are really, really good at, right? Like being able to go jump from one task to another. And so everyone's like, how are you multitasking like this? And they're like, they just think that it's multitasking, but it's not. And then it ends up often just being a distraction. So you want to be able to have the power within you to decide whether am I task switching because this is the right thing and it's a smart move for me to be doing right now, or is it just because I'm getting distracted and I actually need to stay focused on the task that I'm doing.
And that is so easy to actually for anyone. If you think about this just in society now, because we have all the social media, you might be on the computer doing your work, but then you decide, oh, I need to go check something, I need to Google something or whatever. And guess what? There's all these ads on the side, and all of a sudden this ad plays, and you're thinking, oh, that looks really cool. Oh, huh, that's interesting. Maybe I'll just listen to that for a minute and I'll go back to my work. And it's so easy there now to get distracted, even no matter who you are, because there's all these distractions just sitting there waiting for you. And I think also entrepreneurs in general and people who have difficulty with attention, if something is shinier or brighter or all of a sudden stimulates them in some way intellectually or emotionally, whatever, it's so easy to get distracted and you don't realize. And then at the end of the day, you go, no, I only got half done what I thought I was going to get done. And you don't realize those little pockets of 15 minutes where you went off somewhere.
Yeah, and our brains are actually like wired, like not to work hard, like to just conserve energy and like right and keep us surviving. And so anytime there's something easier to do instead of what you're actually doing, unless there's an extreme motivational reason, your brain's gonna get attracted to doing that easy thing. So it's much easier to scroll on Instagram or Facebook than it is to do the task that you're trying to do, right? So when we could remember that, then we could either make our tasks easier, or B, we could make it easier for us not to get distracted by reinforcing the patterns and the neuron connections in our brain to stay focused, even though we're getting distracted. So every time you notice that, like, hey, I got distracted because this task was easier, then you'll be like, okay, I'm stopping right now. I'm going back to my task. And you'll notice that the time gap from when you notice it to when you get distracted gets smaller and smaller and smaller until it's no longer there anymore.
Exactly. And I want to backtrack a little bit because I realize my background's in behavioral optometry. So I've worked with lots of people with ADHD. And I realize since we came on today, we've been talking about this, but we haven't really said what is ADHD. So why don't you go into that? So in case people are wondering, what are they talking about? Is that some government something? What is ADHD?
Okay, well, ADHD is actually a really bad name for whatever we're talking about. It stands for attention deficit hyperactive disorder. And every single one of those words are just don't belong there. First of all, it's not a disorder. Second of all, not everyone who has ADHD is hyperactive. And it's not attention deficit. Attention, like it's not that you have the lack of attention with ADHD, because people with ADHD could actually hyper focus for many hours for much longer than people without ADHD. But it's more of like an attention like regulation or control type thing. The lack of switch of like the control is a little bit jammed. I like to say, you know. So like some things is like really challenging to focus on while certain things are really long. So that is what it officially stands for. But you may notice it, you may know it as like people who are super hyperactive, or they can't focus for long periods of time. Or there may be, this one is actually not a type of ADHD spoken about very much, but it's people who are like very spaced out and just like, and not very focused on the task, like inattentive, it's called, and it seems like they're just daydreaming. Those are just some of the many, symptoms of ADHD. I will add one more thing. I do not like to label people ADHD. I do not think that we're doing really good benefit by labeling people ADHD, but it is a good word just for us to know what we are talking about as a way of communication, not as much of like, you have ADHD, so you can do this, or you don't have ADHD, so you can't do that.
And personally, I've never been labeled ADHD, but I know for myself that sometimes it'll take me time to get started on a project, but once I get started, I don't want to quit because I'm afraid that I'll get distracted, and so I will keep on doing it. And there's been extreme cases where I don't happen to have to go in the office that day. I'm just like home doing, I have a couple days to do work, 2, 3 days to do work, and I will start a project and I will start it and I'll stay up all night up to the next day. And then finally, when I can't think anymore, I go to sleep. But I'm like really excited because I got all this accomplished and I wasn't distracted this time. But then I'm exhausted and useless for the, the following 24 hours. But that fear of not getting something done because if I stop, I might not restart. So.
Yeah, that's a very common struggle. Because like you've mentioned, the not start, like if you stop not being able to restart, actually comes from like the ability of like a transition. People with ADHD really struggle with transitions. That's why like they hate getting in the shower and then they hate getting out of the shower, things like that. And a lot of times it's simply due to like the anticipation of like everything, and it's like all the energy it takes to get started. But actually, everyone, not even like people with ADHD, all of us, we does take the most amount of energy to get started. So like like when you turn on a car, it uses the most of it, like power to like energy to turn it on. It's when you start a task, so you use the most amount of energy, and so that's why the brain knows this and will. And like anticipates that the whole time it's going to be this hard, but it's really just the starting part. But it brings us back to what we were speaking about in the beginning of task switching. Every single time we jump and we task switch, our brain has to start all over again. So now all of a sudden it jumped to something easy like scrolling on Instagram, but to go back to that thing we started, it has to use more energy all again to restart that task all over.
That makes sense. And I don't know if this is ADHD either, but the other thing I think of is, talking about starting something, sometimes when something's a really big project, I put off starting it because I'm like, okay, if I started it, I might not finish it, or it's just like it's going to take too long. So I look at things and things that are going to be fast and short. I'm like, okay, I have a list of 10 things. Let me do the 5 things that are going to go fast so I can ha feel accomplishment and check off my list. But then there's that big one that I know is going to take me longer. And so I will procrastinate on that one. And even once I get started, I'm thinking, oh, I'm never going to finish this because it takes so much. Not only attention, but just consistency and dedication and not stopping and not in, then those big projects are the ones where it's easy to have an issue or problem come up. In other words, there's going to be a lot more problem solving. So you're worried about, okay, when I hit this barrier, am I going to finish it or am I just going to like stop and not finish it? And then I feel bad because I didn't accomplish something.
Yeah, you made a really good point there. Often to many tasks, there are little parts to it. Like if you think about even sending the email, right? You have to read the email, you have to understand the email, you have to formulate the response in your head, you have to actually write it out, you have to spell it, right? Like there's all these things that we do, even just to send like a one sentence email. And many times we push off these tasks because one slice of this big task is a challenge for our brain. And like we said, our brain doesn't like to work hard, right? And so this whole task we don't want to do. So if we could identify what part of this task is a challenge, or maybe like in your example, you knew exactly that like this problem is going to like might come up, but we'll have to figure out for this sort of thing, then you can solve for that problem before you even begin. Often those problems are related actually to those thinking skills, to the three phases of thinking. And sometimes it's simply about approaching it a different way. But when you know it, then it's like, okay, that's not so difficult anymore. I'm just going to solve it, and then, or I'll find a way to deal with it, or I'll get someone to help me, or something like that. And then the task becomes a lot easier.
And that does make a difference. Remember there was something that I thought, oh, I don't know how to do this. And having the wide network that I have, I thought to myself, okay, I don't know how to do this. And if I don't figure this out, I can't do it. And so I started thinking, who do I know that knows how to do this? Because I didn't have the bandwidth to try and figure it out. I mean, I could have sat there and done it, but I was already procrastinating on it. And so I called somebody who knew all about it. I said, "Hey, can you help me with this?" And I think I don't know if that's with everybody, but I have a hard time sometimes asking for help because I'm thinking I should know this. I should, I'm a business person. I should already know how to do this, but we don't know how to do everything.
Have you ever heard of the book Who Not How by Dan Sullivan?
That is a great book. That almost always is who. Who can help me?
Yeah, it is exactly. Especially if we want to go far, if we want to go big, it's who. The how. I just want to put out there, we do want to look for the who 100%, and we could learn from experts, learn from coaches, learn from people who've done it before us. That's not to say that we don't, there are times we have to see whether are we not, are we asking someone because we just don't want to do it or just because it's just too hard for us? Or are we asking someone because it's actually the smarter move right now for us to ask someone, and it's not worth it for me to waste my bandwidth on this when I already have six clients waiting for me and I'm only getting 3 hours of sleep, right? Then yes, you're not wasting bandwidth to go and learn how to computer program something for your website, something like that, right? But you want to be aware of what side of the spectrum do you fall on, and be aware when you're asking for advice. Is it because it's the smarter thing, or is it because oh, I don't want to work hard anymore, this skill?
That is a great distinction, and that is so true. So true. So, let's go back to talking about breaking things into pieces. So, you had this big project and you're looking at it and you've been putting it off for 3 days and you're like, "Okay, this project has to get done and this date and that date is looming closer and closer." What do we do? How do we break that up so that we can actually manage it?
Yeah, so I like asking this question of what part of this task does my brain not like? So what part of this task does my brain not like, or does your brain not like? And get very specific. There's going to be a part of the task that is challenging, maybe two or three parts, but usually not more than that. And label that specific part. Now, you may need to go a little bit deeper. So for example, if let's say podcast edit, you have a podcast, and you're like, okay, I like doing the interviews, but I don't like finding the guests. Okay, so you ask, what part does my brain not like? Finding the guests. Okay, you want to go deeper on that. What part of finding guests does my brain not like? Well, my brain doesn't like having to email potential guests. Okay, one step deeper. Why does your brain not want to Does not like to email potential guests? Well, I think I find it a little bit challenging to formulate my words to figure out exactly what I want to say. I know what I want to say, but I just struggle to formulate my words. See, it's not really about finding the guests, it's about struggling to formulate your words to say what you want to say. And that is what you want to solve. Those are actually usually related to the thinking skills. There are 28 thinking skills in total, and usually it will be very connected to one of those thinking skills, and that's the thinking skill you want to work on. So in this case right here, you would want to get better at expressing yourself in a written form, in a clearly cohesive manner, in a way that it's easy for you. And yes, you will still have to send out a couple of emails to guests while you're developing this, but within a few weeks, if you're very conscious about this, all of a sudden it's going to be easier to be like, hey, how did I get here? So just ask, keep on asking yourself, what part of my brain design does my what part of this task does my brain not like? And that is the problem you want to solve.
Right. And now that you're in my wheelhouse here as far as podcasts. So one thing that has helped me too is setting up systems. So the actual reaching out to people, you do have to figure out because you're talking to all different people. So there's different reasons why you want someone on your podcast. You want to let them know, hey, I want you to be on my podcast because I think you could add value in this way. So that's the part where it's very creative and you're actually telling them why you think they would be a great person to be on the podcast. But once they do that, I have this the same response. So I have an email that's a form email that has all the questions and all the information. So at that point, it becomes automated, except for me putting their name at the top and sending them the email. And then after I send them the email, I have a same response I say to everyone. I'm so excited you're going to be on the podcast, and I sent it with this email address. So those things are the automated piece. So I think also some parts, like you said, are going to be the hard parts that we have to kind of figure out every time, but there's some parts of our work we can actually automate so it's always the same.
Yeah, I think like you said, it's a combination of those two, right? In every area of our life, we want to take the strategies and take what we've learned from one area and helping to other areas. So let's say just like we've automated podcasting, and even if someone doesn't have a podcast, where else in their lives can they automate stuff, right? They really want to learn from this, spread it to more areas, and at the same time, they want to make the challenging parts easier. So when you are having the automations to help you as much as possible. And at the same time, those challenging things don't have to be a challenge anymore because you're working on them.
28. Again, looking at the task, that's too big. So, what are some of the main thinking skills that people need to learn just to function and to be productive?
Yeah, okay. So first of all, you already have most of them. We all like have them unless someone is extremely, extremely delayed. Almost everyone or every person that is listening to this has all the thinking skills on some level. So you're not starting from scratch. That's like a big thing. It's not that you have that many to learn. And these are the foundational thinking skills behind everything that you're doing, including listening to this podcast, including talking. Whatever you're doing requires you to use these thinking skills. They're behind every single task that you do. And we can always be improving in all of them. So you are really good at some of them, and you can always be improving them to get them even better. But you don't have to be overwhelmed, but like, oh my gosh, so many, 28. But I will share with you, answer your question. Popular ones that I see for people with ADHD and just people in general. Okay. One super common one, speaking of which, so many comes exactly from this thinking skill called clear perception. Clear perception. It's about we take in information through our five senses. We see something, it comes into our brain, we hear something, it comes into our brain, right? And then your brain organizes it and figures out what to do with it. What happens when there is like a ton of information and the information just gets overloaded into your brain and it's overwhelming and it's all blurry and like, ah, now I don't even want to do it, right? Like if you ever walked into a room that was so messy and you knew you needed to clean it, but instead of cleaning it, you just went out and walked. Turn the other way and close the door behind you because you didn't even want to look at it. It was way too messy. That is coming from clear perception, from when clear perception is weak, it's blurred. Okay. So, because we take in information through our five senses, we improve this by going through our five senses. If you were next time to see a task and get a little bit overwhelmed by it, by this room that you need to clean or whatever else that you need to do, and you look around the room and you're like, okay. What do I see? And you start just listing things you see. Okay, I see laundry, I see a chair, I see some pens, and just start listing out the things that you see. What do I hear? What do I taste? What do I smell? Go through all the five senses and just list out things that you see. What happens is the information now is you're by labeling the things one by one, the information is coming into your brain one by one, and your brain is able to organize and see it in a clear way. Now, in the beginning, you have to be conscious of this, but after you do this a couple of times, your brain is going to start doing it automatically that you won't even have to think about it anymore. And one day you walk into that messy room, and all of a sudden, you know exactly what to do.
That does make total sense because when you just look at one thing at a time, so I know even when I'm going to clean a room, sometimes I just start one place with one shelf. Okay, I'm just going to look at this one shelf and organize this one shelf. I'm not going to worry about all the other things because if I do, I won't even start at all. So I'm just going to clean this one shelf. And sometimes after I clean the one shelf, I feel really good about it. So I'm like, I'm gonna clean this shelf just above it, you know. But I had started out that just so I don't get overwhelmed, I'm just gonna do this one shelf, and that is
Yeah,
helpful because it can be overwhelming.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Usually, what I tell people to do after they go through the five senses, exactly what you said, is to create just a starting point. So, think of just the first thing that you're going to do. So, like, walk into this room, you listed out all the things, and now it's like, okay, what's my starting point? Well, I could pick up the laundry. Sure, no problem, right? And then what's the next thing I could do? I can pick up the laundry. I can like pick up the garbage, or I can sweep the floor, whatever it is that you need to do. Yes, whenever we can take a big task and we can break it down into smaller tasks, then it's much more manageable.
Yeah. So, when you're working with people on these things, a lot of people, they, if they've actually been diagnosed with ADHD or they just want help with their focus, they'll go to the doctor and say, "Hey, give me a drug that makes me focus." And, there's pros and cons to those drugs, as everyone knows, that, they can change your personality. They can deplete your adrenal system. There's a lot of not so great things about these drugs, but that's, I think, those are some of the drugs that are prescribed more than anything else, at least in the United States. I mean, they are really high on the list as far as drugs that are being prescribed every day for people. So people are going to these, I think you would call it almost a crutch. And some people do need that because their chemicals are off in their body. But most of us, we're using it more as a drug, like, oh, I'm tired today. Let me have my coffee. So we're using our coffee as a drug, right? So a lot of times people are reaching for the drug, but there are ways to not have to use that for a lot of people. So what are some of the strategies you teach people so that they can actually focus on their own without outside help?
I absolutely love that you asked me this because here's something really interesting. The part of your brain is in charge of choosing to focus. Okay. So when you want to choose to focus on a task, it's called the parietal lobe. Here's where you're going to absolutely love this. This part of the brain is also in charge of the sense of touch. Now, most of the time, we see things before we touch them. And so our brain knows what it's felt it before, and our brain knows what it feels like and is already sending messages to the brain, right? And all of a sudden, by the time our hand gets to it and our skin, our sense of touch is acting in, it's not even like our brain doesn't even need to use that sense of touch because our eyes have already sent the messages to the brain of what it feels like. So what happens is we basically never use our sense of touch unless we're feeling something new, or it's like a surprise. Like I thought something was dry, but it actually like had a little bit of water on it. So like, oh, like that's. Other than that, we're not often using our sense of touch. So what you want to do to improve your sense of focus, because it's in the same part of the brain, and you want to create those more neuron connections in this part of the brain, is remove your eyesight. That means do things blindfolded. Okay, I'm going to share with you a few ways how to do that in a minute. But what happens is when you do things blindfolded, automatically you have to use your sense of touch. And now you're creating new neuron connections in your brain, and that part of your brain automatically allows you to focus more. You may even feel this, like literally feel like your brain is hurting because of it, because it's like really straining parts of your brain and going down new paths that it just hasn't gone before. And so you're going to feel it. But you something that you want to do a couple minutes every day, and you'll start seeing a massive improvement. So here are some of my favorite things, the ways that you could do some things blindfolded. Either you could do like household tasks that aren't dangerous. So like nothing like cutting with knives or things like that. But like if you could like fold laundry, and it's like, oh, it's okay. If it's like a little bit messy, it's like, okay, I did it blindfolded, but that's part of what you're feeling. Like where's the sleeve, right? And like you're figuring it out. Another thing you could do is take either like hot glue or puff paint, like anything that will dry a little bit like higher up. And draw different pictures together with a partner. You draw one some pictures and they draw some pictures. Once it dries, you each swap pictures. And with your eyes blindfolded, so you don't want to see the picture before, you feel the picture. Now don't just feel and say it's a flower. Like you want to use your fingers and feel like how many petals are it? Which petal is the biggest petal? things like that. And that is going to get your brain to improve focus. There's like quite a few Braille books, like for kids, like Braille maze books and things like that, that are also amazing.
Wow, that is really, really unique. And, people learn more when they are using all their senses and their body. I mean, that's the basis of what I do in an optic brain fit, where, people are using their body, their brain, their vision. And in this case, you're just removing the vision. And that makes so much sense. I mean, think about, I don't know if everyone's played this, but, long trips in the car, we used to say, okay, one person turns around, the other person draws a letter on their back, and they have to guess what is the letter. They're not seeing it, they can only feel the letter. And it's amazing that we can do that, or we can do that with pictures. The same thing where we say, okay, what is this? Oh, it's a flower. So it's amazing how our brains are. So, 80% of what you perceive is through your eyes. So when you close your eyes, all your other senses have to kind of perk up and come alive and help out. The thing is, we remember the things we feel. If you think about, I'm trying to remember that country singer's name, Glenn Campbell, I think, that he went into like dementia where he wasn't quite himself. But yet, if they put him on a stage and gave him a guitar and sat him down and asked him to play a song, he could remember the word, sing it, play it, everything exactly. But as soon as he walked off the stage, he couldn't remember who anybody was, or he didn't remember any of that. But the feeling, the muscle memory from doing that for so many years was there, and it'll never go away. It's just, he'll always have that. So when you add that feeling in there, it's not only helps with attention, it helps with memory, it helps with functioning at a very basic level.
Because all that is related afterwards to those foundational 28 thinking skills. So all of those get stronger, so everything else gets easier.
Exactly. So that is very unique. So practice something safe. No walking up and down stairs, although you could do that. I know of people who have been blind or ha went blind later in life, and they have their whole house actually scripted out. Like they know how many steps it is from their bedroom to their kitchen. I know a lady that she loves to cook, and she has been blind for years, and she's at the hot stove. She knows where everything is in her kitchen. They put the same things in the same place, so she knows by feel where everything is, and she cooks big meals. So our brains are quite amazing at adapting. And the thing is, the more you can, that's I was going to say automate, but it's not even automate. When you embed those memories into the body itself, those are things you don't have to think about, like driving. Okay. So when we're learning how to drive, of course, we're learning and we're conscious. But after a while, our body is doing that. Have you ever been daydreaming or listening to something on the radio? Or, now we listen to our phones and you get somewhere and you think, how did I get there? Your body knows the way and it took you there. It even avoided collisions. It stopped at stop signs. It w went at green lights, and you were totally unaware consciously that you were doing any of those things, and you arrive at work.
Oh my gosh, so much to say about this. I'm gonna actually bring it back to what we spoke about all the way in the beginning of like, how are we able to drive and listen to this podcast, let's say, if we can't multitask? And it is exactly because of what you said. The only time we can multitask is when we are doing something automatically that our brain doesn't even have to think about it, right? It's because of that feel, because of all the other senses, everything else that's happening, that is just happening automatically. And so your brain could focus on the podcast out looking, well, it's looking on the road, but it's not being conscious of it, right? Except what happens if automatically in the middle of nowhere there's like a pedestrian that like walks in front of your car and you're like, oh my gosh, and you like take a second, or maybe a car comes out of nowhere. During those seconds when you were looking on the road, your brain tuned out and didn't hear what was happening on the podcast. And you're like, hey, what was that about? Like you come back afterwards and you're like, hey, I missed a minute. And it's like, yeah, because your brain can't focus on two things at once. But when you train things to do them so much automatically, then we can start doing that multitasking.
Exactly. And when you talk about that, it reminds me of I'm a person that I like to master things. So some people say jack of all trades, but I am interested in a multitude of various things that are not related at all. But when I'm working on one thing, I'm only concentrating on that one thing and I go really deep and I master it. So I totally master this. But I can't be totally mastering this and working on this at the same time. So even though I do a lot of things, maybe one day I might do three different, totally different things. When I am working on it, I am, like you said, hyper focused and I'm going deep into that and I'm knowing it to that body level. And then I go to the next thing and I'm knowing that to that body level. Where I think there's other people like they really are that jack of all trades and I don't know how they do it, but you know, they know a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and they're really good at trivia. But if you actually did want them to fix your dishwasher, they may do just a half job because they really don't know how to fix a dishwasher. They just think they know enough to fix a dishwasher, but good luck with that. So, but I think a lot of times when people they think they don't have good attention, but it's that, like you said, they're just distracted. There's too many things. And what you were talking about is just breaking things down into one thing, only concentrating consciously on one thing and letting our subconscious, you know, breathe us. And you know, we don't think about breathing. So some of the subconscious things are like that. You know, we just got to let the subconscious things run themselves
That's
and
a
we
good
just
point.
concentrate on what we're working on.
Imagine if we couldn't multitask, but we needed our to breathe and to, for our heart to pump oxygen, and for us to like blink our eyes and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be crazy.
So, what other tips do you have for people if they're, you know, let's, you know, you specifically work with entrepreneurs. Of course, I'm sure you can work with anyone, but you tend to your wheelhouse is working with entrepreneurs. So, what are some of the basic things that, no matter who they are, what business they're doing, or what they're dealing with? Almost always, these are the basics. So I know when I was doing the vision training with people, there were certain things, like one of them was about focus, which is accommodation when it comes to vision. I mean, everybody needs work on the accommodation. First of all, being able to do it, and two, being able to do it accurately. So what are two or three basic things that I don't care who you work with, you're going to have to work on those?
Yeah, so it really, like the starting point is really to identify where each one of your thinking skills are. So I would have them do an assessment, which anyone who's listening to this episode can take for free at lifeboostuniversity.com/brain. And as soon as you take the assessment, it takes you under 10 minutes. You just see where each one of the 20 thinking skills are, and you rate yourself from 1 to 5. You don't have a right or wrong. You rate yourself from 1 to 5. So that way you can see in relation how strong you are. So this I'm 4, I'm pretty good at. And this I'm 2, I may need to improve in. Things like that. And when they're all there in front of you, you can also see, like, okay, if I'm really good at this one, this is a 5. I can use it to leverage to help my weaker ones. Things like that. So the basic to answer the question, like the number one thing everyone needs to do is need to start by having that awareness and an understanding where their thinking skills are. And then based on that, they can say, like, okay, which specific exercises do they need to help them improve that thinking skill? So if it would be clear perception, for example, like we spoke about in the beginning, it would be doing going through the 5 senses. If it was something having to do with understanding time, which is another common thinking skill, specifically in the ADHD space, it would be doing exercises to help your brain, help your brain with time and things like that.
Yeah, and when you say that about time, I remember my youngest child, she always had some issues with like getting things done on time because she got distracted. She was my social butterfly. She still is my social butterfly as an adult. And she had a teacher who I think was brilliant when she was, I think she was in second grade, first or second grade. And because she had difficulty focusing, what she did is she took a timer and she put it on her desk. One of those timers where you could see where the time was, not where it was counting down digitally, but where you could see it was here and it was going to finish at a certain spot. And she'd put that on her desk and she'd say, okay, so I want you to, this is what you're going to work on right now. And when it gets to there, you got to have this done. And so she'd be working and then she could look at the timer and see how much time she had. And it kept her focused on her task because she knew when that thing rang, it was one of those old-timey ones, you know, it's really loud. So she knew when it got to that ringing that she had to be done. And that really helped her because she'd been working and maybe she got distracted. And then she looks at the timer. Oh, okay. And it made her go back to her task.
Yeah, visual timers are super helpful. And I also like to say for like a week, time the tasks you do often. So how long it takes to shower, to respond to your emails, things like that. So that way you have an average. Often we either think of a task like, oh, I could do this really quickly. It only takes me 5 minutes to put on my makeup, but it actually takes you 20. Or the opposite, we're like, oh, this task is going to take 2 hours and it really just takes 30 minutes. So, especially tasks you do often, you want to have an actual gauge on like how long this is. So, if I have to be at the meeting and like I have a meeting starting in 20 minutes, do I have enough time to put in that load of laundry or not?
Exactly. And I know I do this, and also the daughter I was just talking about, she does that this too. But when I'm setting my alarm at night, I do set the time for when I get up. And this morning I was actually late getting up. And but I also not only set the time when I'm going to get up, but I set the timer for every 15 minutes until I have to leave the house. Because otherwise, the same thing. I'm like, I'm getting ready and I'm like, oh, I didn't get the clothes out of the dryer. Oh, let me go do that. So then I'm like, it's just going to take me a minute, right? So I get the clothes out of the dryer, I put them away, and then I come back to getting ready. And then all of a sudden it's like, it's 8 o'clock and I have to leave in 15 minutes. I haven't eaten my breakfast or put my lunch together. And oh, you know. And the buzzer for 8 o'clock just rang, and I gotta leave at 8:15. So I know those timer things really help. So if they're timing, so if I'm in the middle of, I decided I wanted to do the laundry, and then that timer goes off, and I look, I'm like, oh, I don't have time to finish putting away this laundry. I gotta get back to getting ready. So it's really, really helpful. And I know that sounds maybe crazy to some people, but I am so easily, engrossed in whatever it is I'm doing because I get really I'm in the present moment. So some people they could be doing all sorts of things, but I'm in the present moment no what matter what I'm doing. And so some people when they look at their timeline of their life, it's in front of them like kind of horizontally in front of them and they can see where they are on the timeline. So this is my past, this is my future, and this is where I'm at. And there's other people like me that their timeline goes from front to back. And so my future is in front of me, my past is behind me, but I'm in it and I don't realize time very much. And so I need those actual physical, what I could say, earthly being conscious reminders because I go so easily into just enjoying, like I go to the park and walk and I'm having so much fun, you know. Taking pictures of the flowers that I re don't realize that, oh, you know, I walk at my lunchtime. It's time to go back to work. So I have those alarms all the time to help me because otherwise I'm just in the present moment and I really am totally unaware of time.
Yeah, I love like timers, and I love doing these type of things that really train our brain to time. When you do them enough, then like your brain starts to like gauge, like, oh, like this was 5 minutes, like I can't do this, or you start like knowing like I can't do the laundry now. But on the other end, there's the time, like the big time. And sometimes people with ADHD often struggle with that, like the whole concept of time, not just the time of right now, but like the time of like a future of like when things are. And then because they know that they struggle with that, and they very much have like a lot of anticipation or anxiety because like I have this meeting tomorrow or things like that, because like they're scared they're going to miss it and things like that. So what I found really, really helps is hanging a big, huge calendars. So like a big calendar of the whole month on the wall, and putting all important dates, important meetings, things like that on that calendar. And this gives your brain the ability to, like you said, like that physical earthy thing to like be able to like tangibly touch and like see. And it really helps the brain understand, like, okay, so this appointment is in 4 days. So right now I'm here, and like I don't have to worry about it until I'm here, or I need to prepare something for it up until these days ahead, things like that. Now, if you want to take this to the next level, specifically, if you want to work on like your big business goals and really like think about like out ahead, then hang up 3, 6 months of calendars up ahead. Like have a whole wall filled with those calendars, and your brain will be able to start thinking bigger and working on those bigger goals and being able to figure out like what needs to happen by this month in order to achieve a goal by that month.
Oh, that is great, especially for people who are very visual, because then you can see it. So I always tell people, you know, you can tell me that, but can you please write it down? Can you t please print that out for me? Will you take make a picture of that for me, so that I can see it, and then it becomes real. Where if you just tell me something, it's not really real for me until I have to visualize it.
Yeah.
So, tell me again, what was the website where people can actually do that self-assessment to see where they are on that?
Yeah, the Life Picks University. So Life, PIX University.com/brain. So
Okay. Is
LifePicksUniversity.com/brain.
that your website that they're
Yeah.
going to? Okay. Because that was one of my next questions. So if people wanted to work with you, do they go there, or do they see you on social media? How do they connect with you?
Yeah, you could connect with me on your favorite platform wherever you are, Life Picks University. On my website, fill out the form if you want. Or start by taking that assessment. That might be a really good idea. And from there, we'll have ways of communicating. So lifepicksuniversity.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you. So now a personal question, because these are the last two questions I ask everybody when we're on the podcast. What is giving you the most happiness and fulfillment in your life right now?
Oh, honestly, it's seeing the massive transformation clients have. We work in 90-day programs, and it literally takes just 90 days, and people like completely change. Like recent cohort that was just finished, or someone who like finished who runs like three businesses, and just like really successful already, but had a lot of like brain fog and not enough time with family. You know, like trying to like make date nights and things like that, and just like overwhelmed and procrastinating on important tasks and stress, and like I said, like three successful businesses, each bringing in like sizable income, and all it took was 90 days, 90 days to really make massive changes, and just get some life back together, and just seeing like how much more energy he has, or how much more excitement and happiness for life he has, makes me so excited. So every one of my clients get those transformations, and because it lights me up, really, really does.
Right. And you're singing my song when you say 90 days. So people who have issues with attention for a long time tell me this is a 6 month program, like, oh, that's gonna take forever. But you tell me 90 days, I can do anything for 90 days.
Woo!
So that is awesome. That is so awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast and, you know, for talking about this, because I think it's, you know, just a rampant issue for people across the board these days, with so much stimulation coming from outside to distract us. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Kimberly, for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, so one last question before we finish. What is your best advice on living an incredible, amazing life?
I feel like what I'm going to say is what everybody has actually heard before already. But until you do it, you're going to need to hear it again because there's a reason why you're not doing it. And that is living your life for yourself and doing what you want, not caring what other people think, not caring what effects like it has, obviously not to harm people, but like to like be living other people's stories because they wanted you to do this thing, so that's why you're doing it. But you just doing what you want to do, and really developing that skill of like not caring what other people think or if this it doesn't fit their narrative, and filling it is what's going to give you the most freedom and the most enjoyment for life.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Esty. We'll talk to you again soon.